This is the PC Gamer Podcast for the week of October 17th, 2005. This week, our guest, Rob Loftus, Senior Producer for Fear at Vivendi Universal. Welcome from wherever you are to our headquarters in Brisbane, California. I'm Dan Morris. With me today is Greg Viederman, the new editor-in-chief of PC Gamer Magazine.
Hello, all.
Congratulations, Greg.
Thank you very much, and congratulations on your promotion as well.
Why, thank you.
Yes.
Not promoted is our other co-host, DJ Stapleton, who remains our assistant editor. And joining us from Berkeley is our finest intern, Norman Chan.
He hasn't been promoted either.
No, he's still an intern, now that I think about it.
He's senior intern.
Yes. Damn.
And joining us from Chicago and not even working here is former staffer Jeremy Williams.
Hey.
Three big games released this week. I'm not sure they get bigger than these three in the space of 7 days. So if you've got $150 on you, now's the time to get rid of it. We've got Fear coming out today. We've got Age of Empires 3 going to be in stores. And we've got Quake 4 headed into stores. Is this November yet? What are we? Late October? It must be getting to be the holidays. Now is the beginning of the time when all the games come out. So if you haven't been playing anything for 2 months, you know why. But Fear, Age of Empires 3, and Quake 4 all headed to us.
For someone who only has $50 in their pocket, what am I going to pick up?
Well, I don't know. It depends what you're into. Are you an RTS guy? Are you a shooter guy?
Well, I guess there's something for everyone.
Do you like little 8-year-old ghosts? I mean, there's a lot of factors to consider.
Yes, do you like aliens or ghosts?
If you're more afraid of aliens or ghosts is the big question. Well, yeah, all these games are reviewed in the December and or holiday issue of PC Gamer. But definitely the word is already out on Fear, which is released today. That got a 92 from us in our last issue, so we can go ahead and talk about that one for sure. Big game. We're going to be joined by Rob Loftus, a senior producer, a bit later. I don't think you're going to find too many people who have too much bad to say about Fear. That's $50 well spent. Unless it's $55, I'm actually not sure. Starting to charge more for these things now.
We went to an event last week, a Fear event, where we were given box copies of the game. Got back to the office at probably 11:30 at night, and installed it right away. Played about the first 15-20 minutes, and it scared the bejesus out of me. And I think DJ has really been squealing away over there at his computer. I've heard him a few times in the last couple of days. He seems to be digging it too.
Yeah, and when Greg's actually trying to do work, I've been playing the game and giving him the play by play.
Well, and what's so great about it is that it's not. I love Doom 3. I gave it a huge score, probably the biggest that it got. But I was sympathetic to the people who were complaining about the monster closets and it just being a sort of boo factory. I think that was fair comment, and I think that's what's so great about Fear. Definitely something we'll be asking Rob Loftus about later, is that it's actually scary. It's actually filled with dread. It's actually got an ominous vibe to it that I don't think I've seen in a game in probably 5 years.
Yeah, when's the last time we had a game that really
I would say System Shock 2. A lot of people would say Undying. I never actually got what was scary about that, but I think you'd have to go to System Shock 2. Whenever that was, 99, I'm going to guess, was the last time I was this creeped out by a game.
Well, Undying actually would be that game for me. I remember playing that sitting next to Dave Reese, and all we would talk about for weeks is how freaked out we were by that game.
I would get scared just walking around the mansion with that dragon gun that would like occasionally expel steam from its nostrils. Like, yeah, I would just do that, and I would jump as it was doing that, so... That was a brilliant game. Yes. Truly, truly horrifying.
That for me overtook Alone in the Dark for the scariest experience I've ever had.
Glorious, yeah. Alone in the Dark.
I have to confess, I've never played pretty much any of those games. Most of System Shock 2, but that's it.
I know you guys don't want to give away too much on Quake 4 yet, although your reviews sort of hit the net. Is the online multiplayer as good as Quake 3, or better than Fear at least?
It's botless, which is the first thing to say about it. But Chuck, who reviewed it, described it as pretty much Quake 3 multiplayer in the Doom 3 engine. If you can get over the lack of bots, then you're in pretty fair territory there.
That's cool.
Yeah, that actually that sounds awfully fun to me. Just the the new maps with the new graphics. I'll be giving that a go. I'm not sure how long I'll be playing it, but it's certainly something that I'll be trying for an hour or two.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think they wanted to fix what wasn't broken about Quake 3 multiplayer. I mean, there are people still playing Quake 3 multiplayer for 6 and 7 figure paydays all over the world. I mean, the tournament circuit is built on Quake 3 multiplayer, so I don't think they want to stray too far off of what is pretty clearly a winning formula for those guys.
But it's not going to be anything terribly new and exciting if you've had your fill of Quake multiplayer. It's probably not going to pull you back in.
Yeah, that's a good point.
In some regards, though, it's going to be an answer to the evolution of FPS multiplayer over the last couple of years, which has been towards a very constructed team-based objective-based mentality. I mean, you look at
Counter-Strike.
Battlefield 2, Counter-Strike. Multiplayer tends to be going in a much more structured direction, and I think Quake 4 is probably going to be a bit of a return to deathmatchy goodness for a lot of people.
Which I freaking love. I mean, there's as cool as a lot of the team games are these days. They don't make me want to just jump in. Like, if I've got 5 minutes, I talk myself out of it because I know that I'm gonna end up sticking around for longer or not be able to achieve enough. Whereas if I could just go into a great death match, I can jump in, jump out, and I'm much more inclined to do that just for a few minutes throughout the day.
Well, it's not like nobody's been doing that. I mean, Unreal has been consistently doing it. I mean, they skipped this year, but for the last several, they've had great deathmatch games.
You mean UT?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Unreal 2007, I'm looking forward to seeing that, because I always kind of liked Unreal a little bit more than Quake, but I think that's just because of the weapons.
The alt fire.
You and I would be at odds.
Well, yeah, we'll fight over it.
But they got better with the weapons over time, but they started off as Nerf weapons, and it took them a few years to really improve on that.
Quake?
Unreal. Yeah. Unreal. It was, Quake just seemed more, it's hard to describe. You're either a Quake guy or an Unreal guy, but Quake always seemed more solid. Like when I was running on running, it was less floaty.
Exactly, The way I described it is the Unreal weapons, it really felt like they're just like exaggerated high-tech museum-type weapons on display, and you don't get like the gritty feel of a heavy rocket launcher or just a fat shotgun in your hand.
I think the Quake shotgun always disappointed the hell out of me. It was just kind of, I felt like I was shooting beanbags at somebody. I mean, maybe it was the sound effects, and also the machine gun was just like plink, 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 and that's not any fun for me. I need something with a louder noise and a better punch to it.
Even more than the weapons, though, the moving around in those game worlds seemed different to me. And in Quake, it always felt like I had weight. It always felt like I was actually walking. And with the other ones, like Greg was saying, I felt like I was floating. It's kind of strange.
What's funny from my perspective is that with either of those approaches, the Unreal approach or the Quake approach, I think both of them pale for me in comparison to a modern-day military conventional setting. I mean, if you stick me with Unreal versus Quake, I'll play the Unreal tournament team-based stuff, but I just can't get into either of those approaches the way I can into a super-realistic modern-day setting, which feels entirely crunchy and entirely gritty. I mean, that's just much more the way I prefer is the sort of Battlefield approach.
Yeah, but like we were saying, you can't jump into that and have a really good time without a good team.
But it's also just the setting. I think Dan prefers that setting. For me, it's sci-fi or die. I want laser beams.
There have to be laser beams from space.
Yeah, I want the next. If the next Battlefield is like a Halo style universe, like far future, I'll be all over that. That or elves.
Somebody's gonna make a mod for it. It's only a matter of time.
Yeah.
And you'd like Battlefront 2. That's coming out November 1st.
I believe there are Jedi in that game, Greg.
they're kind of like elves.
And maybe a Sith or two.
Very nice.
We do have a listener-submitted tech question, and since we have Greg around, he's probably the man to answer it, because it sure ain't me. Jeremy, if you got it queued up.
Hello, this is Winfield Jackson, a.k.a. Skittles. I recently bought a video card online, ATI Radeon 900 XT, 256 megabytes. It hasn't been running up to what I expected. I'm wondering if there's any problems that I need to fix. I've already tried overclocking it, and it didn't really need it, and I couldn't really overclock.
It kind of goes on from there. Any advice for the guy?
Well, it's hard to know hard to give him advice without knowing more about his overall system. I don't know what he paired the video card with.
Right.
And I don't know what games he's playing it on. The 9000 XT is actually what it is. It's probably at this point would be considered lower middle of the road graphics card. So it's not going to get you tons of frame rate unless you had a really weak video card before it. It's very solid. You'll certainly be able to play, just about any game out there at, 1024 by 768 with, middle of the road settings. It's a solid card. Unfortunately, I just need to know more about his overall system config to be able to give him specific advice.
Is that
he talks about overclocking. What's your stance on that, on video cards overclocking?
I tend not. To be honest, once upon a time I was an overclocker. Because, money was tight, and you actually saw a lot of performance gains from it. These days, I think the returns are negligible. There's a lot more headroom in a lot of the hardware. You can up the clocks on a lot of these components, so long as you've got proper cooling. In this case, if he's overclocking this video card and he's not seeing improvements, it could possibly be just that he's paired it with a slower CPU. And no matter how much he overclocks his video card, his CPU is the bottleneck in his particular system. So, by and large, I don't think there's anything really wrong with overclocking a little bit. I wouldn't go nuts, especially without investing in some proper cooling. But you always have to be careful when overclocking that you're doing so in a system where it makes sense. Again, if you've got a slow CPU, overclocking the nuts off of your video card, depending on the game, won't make as big a difference as it would if you paired it with a comparable CPU.
We're going to step away for just a quick pause, and then we'll be back with Rob Loftus. He's the senior producer for Fear at Vivendi Universal. Hang on.
This is John Morello from Valve, and you're listening to the PC Gamer Podcast.
We're here with Rob Loftus, senior producer at Vivendi Universal. Today is Fear Tuesday, October 18th. The game is being released right now as we speak. The gates are open. So tell us, Rob, you were working on Fear for a long time. It's now in the can, as they say, and people are getting started playing. How do you spend a day like today knowing that people are getting their hands on it right now and sales underway?
Well, you spend it, anxiously checking news sites, checking out the fan reaction. You try to get some word from your marketing department to see how the game sales are going, if there's any indication of it. It's a very exciting day. It's a day that, we've all been looking forward to for a long time. And it's a great day.
Do you literally call up the store owners or, clerks on the floor asking how many copies are going off the shelves or what?
I've been known to go to a couple stores and actually check to see if there's stock, and there's a couple stores that are local around here, and I may actually go visit and see how it's doing. It's always nice to see that see your product actually on the shelf. But in terms of like the marketing department and the sales department, they'll call like the corporate side of the retailers and ask them if there's any kind of sales reports.
Is it a bit like election night where you're sort of reading tea leaves for 24 hours?
It's an awful lot like that. You look at how the sales are doing, you try to project, and hopefully it's going well.
Tell me a little bit about your reaction to the early slate of reviews that you've seen. Obviously, you guys spend so much time with the game that objectivity is probably out the window.
It seemed that the first crop of reviews come up, and it was great because like you're just saying, you get pretty close to a product and you feel great about it, but it's always like you're releasing it out to the world and you're hoping that everybody's going to like it, and you have confidence that they will, but when those reviews come in, it's just it's a great feeling to see the reaction that we've been getting. So I mean, it's awesome.
I wanted to ask you about the AI in the game, because it's been literally blowing me away many, many times. It's one of the best I've seen in a shooter lately, and I just wanted to know what you guys did differently.
Well, in Fear, the AI actually can evaluate situations it's part of their natural behavior. So there's a couple spots in the game, referencing the demo, there's kind of a playground area where they come in, they can actually use the environment. And what they do is they come in and they come into a situation where they see the player and they know that they can use the environment to, get around him or, get behind him, or there's actually squad-based tactics. There's a leader within the group and he'll direct some of his troops to actually, to outflank you or to attack you full on. And they also retreat, and it's the effect on screen, when you combine that with the animations of those guys, jumping over, ledges, pulling, making their own cover for themselves as well. I mean, the effect is highly realistic, and it's really thrilling, and it all goes back into that close quarters battles, focus that is part of Fear, and that you really want to taste that thrill, and that's the AI is, it's a huge part of that.
So if I identify and kill the group leader, are they disorganized?
Well, sometimes they will flee, yeah. But, they're certainly a special forces group, so they will reorganize.
So what can you tell me about the body awareness that you've gotten there? Because in most first-person shooters, you'll look down and you won't see your feet. In this one, you do. I mean, I really feel like I'm actually there. I've got a body. I see my shadow on the walls, and it's really detailed. Was that something you guys really set out to do?
Absolutely. I mean, Monolith definitely wanted the player to actually look down and see their feet. And they wanted the player's character to feel like, it's a vessel for the actual real life player's personality. So, and to do that, you got to be able to see yourself within the world. You got to feel like you're part of it. So when you walk into an area and you see that shadow casting off, and that's casting off of you, or you look in a puddle of water and you see a reflection, or you just look down and see your feet, that's all part of that. Because you need to feel like you're grounded within that reality.
Now the voice acting is really good so far that I've played. I'm about halfway through it. Did you use professional voice actors or the standard run-of-the-mill game actors?
Well, I mean, they're definitely professional voice actors. Craig Hubbard, the lead designer and creative director of the game, did a wonderful job of voice direction, and he's been very experienced with that. Doing that for the No One Lives Forever series as well. So, I mean, there's a wealth of experience at Monolith for voice direction, and they've been working with a number of actors on previous titles, and some of them came back for Fear.
I'm curious if you can tell us anything about the actual process by which the game got the green light. I think the thing that most impresses me about this game is that it got off the ground in an age where new IP is really sort of looked at like somebody farted in the room when you walk into the corporate boardroom. Mm-hmm. It really is so hard. I mean, I hear from developers all the time about how hard it is to get a new IP out the door. I'm wondering what you can tell us about the
it's
process between Monolith and Vivendi that actually got the momentum running on this thing.
It's a huge challenge. I mean, publishers are notoriously risk averse these days, and new IP is always a risk. But with Fear, I mean, it started with a kernel, which was, Monolith wanted to create a game that was, about that visceral action experience. And it's feeling like you're within an action movie and tasting that thrill. And when you start with that kind of, that prototype of what the game is actually going to be, and you actually show that to somebody, like, listen, we want to make a game around this. We want to make a game around this kind of thrilling combat, and we're going to wrap this paranormal storyline around it. It's a lot easier for people to digest that, because when they realize that, okay, this is, the core mechanic, we see it, we believe in it, and, let's make it. And, it doesn't hurt when you have, a team like Monolith who is, so reputable within the games industry for, in terms of first-person shooters, certainly, getting, such high scores on No One Lives Forever, No One Lives Forever 2. So there's a wonderful pedigree there. So you can line up the evidence, if you will, for the executives to commit to the investment.
We heard rumors of a Fear movie already signed. Is there any truth to that?
I can't comment on that. I don't know anything about that. I'm sorry.
That's what I expected, but thanks for humoring me anyway. I appreciate it. One other question for you. Obviously, Fear is very, very movie influenced. You know, the Japan horror aspect has been talked about a lot. I guess I'm just curious to know from your perspective, given that shooters tend to fall into one of a very small handful of subgenres, if it's, you know, mm-hmm. World War II or Marines versus Aliens, or hardcore gritty street crime, I guess are really the only three major subgenres.
Right.
I'm wondering if you expect Fear and the buzz that it's had so far to really set off a horror genre.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's when we when Fear was, you know, when Monolith set out to make Fear, it was to make that, you know, that action first person shooter game, and you know, and then the paranormal storyline as well with it. I mean, it's in terms of horror. I mean, it's. I'd like to see. It's anything that inspires more creativity. I mean, within the game genre is a great thing, and I'd love to see, you know, different kinds of games coming out. And you know, if Fear is an influence for that, I mean, that's awesome.
I personally love the atmosphere you managed to do with Fear, with the creepiness of it, rather than with Doom 3. You know, a lot of people call that a horror game, but it's just boo, boo, boo over and over again.
Right.
It's startling, not scary. This game is actually unsettling. You know, the things that scare you don't usually try and hurt you. They're just there to creep you out, and that's, I think, much more effective.
Right. If you followed any of the press around Craig Hubbard, our lead designer, one of the things that he definitely wanted to do was make sure that, you know, the fear, if you will, within Fear is, you know, it really gets underneath your skin. It's really about creating a creepy sense of atmosphere within the game, because you don't want the player to be, you know, to get numb to those moments. You can't be too in their face. But at the same time, you got to have those moments that are like the big payoff. That's what we have, those nightmare sequences where you got like the blood on the ceiling, you know, and then there's like a real, so like a large scare that goes on there, something that's really like, you know, whoa. We also use that, you know, to advance the narrative within the game. In terms of the environments, it's definitely about, you know, this real moody lighting, you know, the dark areas that you don't necessarily see what's around there. And because a lot of times, you know, what's scarier is what you don't see rather than what you do see.
What's scary about it to me is that the setting is so recognizably our own.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know, I mean, Undying never scared me because it's a big gothic house. I've never even been in one of those. You know, I'm from suburban California, but I know
right.
office parks. And I know, you know, dilapidated industrial zones, and to actually set the game in an environment like that, and then just kind of pervert it with the creepy supernatural stuff, just
Absolutely.
Seemed like a masterstroke to me.
Absolutely, it could be your office, or it could be, you know, an environment that you've experienced before. I mean, it's with areas like that, you know, it's easier to preserve the suspension of disbelief, and you know, you've got. And you bring in that paranormal aspect, and it's definitely creepy.
All right, last question for you, Rob, and then we'll let you go. Is, you know, today's ship day, and the game's out the door. Are you going on vacation tomorrow?
I will definitely be taking some time off very soon.
Okay.
Not necessarily tomorrow, but
very soon.
Very soon.
All right, we got one question from a listener on via MP3, so we're gonna subject you to this one real quick. Hang on a second.
Okay.
Hey guys, this is Tyler Tibble from Nova Scotia, Canada, or T-Man700 from the forum. A question for the Fear developers. How long did it take you to make the game start to finish?
Well, in terms of the entire production cycle, is about 3 years.
Is that pretty standard for this level of AAA shooter, 3 years?
It all depends on the size of the game you're creating, but I think that's pretty standard for a game of this size, and you know, this meeting the expectations that was out there, you know, really creating the game that the audience wanted. It took about 3 years. I would think that's probably about a standard length of time.
Okay, Rob Loftus, thanks for joining us. Appreciate your time, and
well,
congratulations on the ship.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
thanks again to Rob Loftus for joining us. Fear was the topic, and it's also the topic of my what we're playing this week, because you know I reviewed this about I'm going to guess about 4 weeks ago, and I'm going to go through it again because it the more I have sat and thought about it, the more I enjoyed that game, and I'm just desperate to go back and have some of those battles one more time. Christian, if any of you guys have already loaded it up, I think you've got to be most of the way through at least the first half at this point, DJ.
Yeah, I'm halfway through that, and I'm also about probably a third to a half of the way through Fable, which I finally gotten around to playing.
What do you think of that?
Where I am right now, it's pretty good. I mean, I'm not seeing as much of an effect on my character for you know the good or evil choices as I would have thought, but it could be that I'm just not to that point in the game yet where I really see how it affects me. But, cause I guess I'm not going totally good or totally evil, so that's probably got something to do with it. But, I just got a gorgeous new, 20.1 inch Dell display at home that I'm playing it on, and it's looking really nice on there, so.
Well, judging from the sound of your portion of the interview with Rob, it sounds like you're liking Fear quite a lot.
Oh yeah, it's definitely deserved every point of the score we gave it. So the single player game might not be all that long. I mean, I'm not sure exactly how far into it I am, but like every minute of it is great. And the firefights are beautiful. The AI is really a hell of a thing to watch. I mean, I was sneaking up behind a guy intending to club him in the back. He kind of spotted me at the last second. Instead of just turning and shooting me, standing there, and you know letting me club him in the face, he turned around and dove headfirst through a window, shattering it, and then you know put some distance between us, and then turned and fired. And that's just kind of unheard of for an AI.
I saw that a couple times too. I mean, that was one of the first thing I noticed was how aggressively they were throwing themselves around the map to get into a better tactical situation. It was pretty impressive. The other thing that I loved about the AI is the fact that their vocal interactions are dynamic. I'm seeing a little bit of this in Call of Duty 2 as well, but if you've got, you know, let's say 7 or 8 bad guys facing you and they're feeling pretty cocky and confident, their voice, their utterings will make that clear, right? They'll start taunting you and stuff. Once you lay the smackdown on them and you throw a grenade in their midst and blow a few of them sky high and you whittle them down to maybe one or two, now all of a sudden panic enters their voices, and it's all dynamic. It's all based on what you're doing. You know, you whittle it down to one, all of a sudden it's like he's radioing for help and calling for his mom. It's pretty terrific.
Yeah, I've gone into a room with 3 guys, shot 2 of them, and heard the last guy yell, "I've got 2 men down." It's pretty cool. Norm, what have you been playing?
Well, the past couple days, I've been playing this thing called Ragdoll Kung Fu, and it's a little mini game published by Valve based on their Half-Life 2 engine. You can download it on Steam for about $15.
Made by what a Lionhead guy.
Yeah, yeah. It's like this little side project he was working on, and then now it's published by Valve. It's basically a side-scrolling fighting game, but the cool thing is that you use your mouse to move, to pull their limbs of these ragdolls around, and then you can do these fighting moves and toss them around, and the animations are really awesome, and the controls are really fluid, and it's really intuitive, so I've been liking that.
Hey, let me ask you, Norm. Mm-hmm. Did you have any trouble downloading that through Steam?
No problem at all.
Is it time to just collectively retire the Steam sucks meme?
Yeah, Steam has been working really great for me. I mean, for Day of Defeat and for Ragdoll Kung Fu and for all the other mods and old
games. Day of Defeat came through perfectly. You're now talking about another Steam game that came through perfectly. I'm just wondering if we're still getting letters from readers, still getting letters complaining about Steam.
And
I'm wondering.
Everybody thinks that I'm steamed is a great joke.
Yeah. By the way, after the 300th time we heard that, all right, we get it. We get the pun. You're steamed. But I'm wondering if I should just start answering each one, saying, "What are you talking about? Steam has been flawless for some period of months now."
Well, nothing has matched the popularity of Half-Life 2 yet. It's going to take Half-Life 3 to really test Steam again. You know, how many people really downloaded Ragdoll Kung Fu, you know, compared to Half-Life
right.
2.
Well, I'll bet Day of Defeat had a download or two.
But all on the same day.
I'll bet you they pushed as much traffic on day one traffic for Day of Defeat, because all the people who bought even a silver edition got it for free. And Day of Defeat is such an online oriented market anyway. I got to imagine they pushed a huge amount of bandwidth on that first day, and I didn't read a single complaint anywhere from anyone.
To be fair, Steam does kind of annoy me sometimes when I just want to fire up Half-Life and play, and it automatically updates. I don't want to update, I just want to play. And that's my one beef with it. I haven't had any technical issues with it on either my work PC or my home PC. So I understand that it's you know, got to be really frustrating if it is giving you a problem or if you have no broadband internet connection, but I mean, for the most part, it's been flawless for me.
Well, the PSP haters among you will be happy to know that I've been playing nothing but a PC game all week. I have
Cool crap.
Yeah.
Which one?
I have finally taken the plunge into World of Warcraft.
Oh no!
Yeah,
and was it a deep plunge?
It's first of all, a week ago I'd never played an MMO. Period. And my impression of MMOs was EverQuest from watching Rob play at his desk 24/7. And this game looks stunning compared to EverQuest. I was amazed by the way that it looks, and I have been completely absorbed. It's how I spend my free time, and I don't even like RPGs.
So what
he's
do you
not,
like?
He's
about
not kidding.
That?
He really doesn't.
Yeah. So other than the fact that it's pretty, what do you like about it?
Well, just that whole, I mean, as soon as I leveled up, you know, as soon as I got, like, my first level and I replaced some clothing and I experienced that game mechanic, it was like someone shot me up with heroin. And
well, that's Diablo, baby. And
that's every RPG worth its salt.
Yes. And I've always avoided those because I've seen people get addicted to them. But my rule for RPGs has always been that I will never play them without someone sitting beside me experiencing it with me. Because I do find the whole the role-playing aspect to be kind of, I don't know, I don't get into that. But as far as, like, you know, adventuring and questing and all that. But when I play with actual people, then there's a feeling of, like, camaraderie and real community there. And obviously the MMO experience lends itself to that. And a friend of mine and I, we get on Skype and we just adventure and go around the world. It's an awesome time. If anyone's like that who had never played an MMO and is all sort of on the fence, dive in.
Are you finding any problems being harassed by the higher level players? I know some problems in the World of Warcraft community is that if you play on, like, PvP servers, you just get... it's no fun because all the top players just, you know, whenever they find newbies, they just go ransack them.
No, I'm on a PvE server, so I don't know anything about that. But my experience with the players has been great. I mean, it's filled with nothing but good people. I've had a lot of help from high characters and when I needed it, and constantly asking if anybody wants to go on quests with me, and everyone joins in. It's fantastic.
If only the nothing but good people thing were true. We've got a few videos online. There are a few, you know, Leroy Jenkins fellows out there that would challenge that assumption.
Oh, come on over to the Illyria Rome.
Hey, Jeremy, that comment just reminded me. Do you remember the old TV movie with Tom Hanks where he became obsessed with Dungeons and Dragons and became the wizard and started wandering around in the streets like that?
No, but I must download that.
Is that going to be you?
Yes. Yes.
Are you going to be at the bus stop there in Chicago talking about the Illyria realm?
I'm already walking the streets wondering how much gold somebody paid for that coat they're wearing.
Outstanding.
I'm Illyrius. I've actually been playing, I hate to admit it, but this week SSX on Tour came out for Xbox and PS2. I, of course, got the Xbox version. Loved SSX 3. And unfortunately, SSX on Tour, not quite as cool. Tried to get a little hip. They borrowed some, seems like some style cues from Napoleon Dynamite, like lots of sort of kiddie drawings that you'd see on binders in school. And the gameplay is just sort of not quite as fun as it was before. In addition to that, also playing Fear, scaring me to death. So I can only play that in short bursts, and going through Fable as well, which I'm also enjoying.
Greg and I are syncing up here, but except for the SSX thing.
Yeah, because you're a hater, and you don't even own a TV.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, whatever. You're not an American if you don't own a TV.
My roommate owns a TV.
There you go. He's an American.
I'm just an American by association, apparently.
Yes.
I'd like to ask all listeners out there to please put a prayer for me for my midterms. Please.
Hey, I'm praying hard for you, Norm, because I know how little you actually study.
Yeah. Oh, little do you know.
No, I do know. You could not be at the rank you are at Battlefield 2 if you were actually studying anything.
That is very true.
So you have my prayers and the prayers of a gaming nation as you enter your midterms. That has been the PC Gamer Podcast for the week of October 17th. Please join us again next week. Check the website, PCGamerPodcast.com. We'll let you know who our guest is going to be so that you can leave questions for them or MP3 questions for them, even better. Those go to PCGamerPodcast@gmail.com, and we check it very frequently. For Jeremy Williams, Norman Chan, Greg Viederman, and DJ Stapleton, and Dan Morris, thanking you very much for listening, and we will talk to you next week. Bye. You'd have to go to System Shock 2, whenever that was, 99, I'm going to guess, was the last time I was this creeped out by a game. What is this, a freaking monologue?
Yes.
Was he doing...
So these are the ones that are sitting in a change? Oh, CD Rom.
What the hell?
Whoa, that sounded really weird.
What?
Greg, mute the microphone if you're talking about something else. Greg's looking at pages.
Got no time. We got to get started.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who needs to ship covers?
Some jerk.
We're rolling. All right. Everybody stand by and I'll lead us in.